LA, where do you want to start tonight?
Well, you know, there's so much to talk about. The one thing is really interesting to me, and it's this, that according to Fox News, they came out, and this is soft disclosure, by the way, folks. You know, when you look at stuff like this, it's soft disclosure. When Fox News comes out with like a little piece that's about, oh, a minute and a half long, you know, and they have graphs and they show this thing, UFO sightings at an all-time high. And no one does anything. It's like the American people just snooze. The church never addresses it for the most part, although there are pastors out there who do address it. Bully for those pastors. They're trying to wake up their flock. But for the most part, no one talks about this stuff. And yet, my unscientific poll that's actually, I talk about, it's actually in the film, in their own words, The Watchmen Chronicles, upwards of 30-35% of the people sitting in the pews right now have had a UFO experience. Lights in the sky, orbs, encounters of the second kind, seeing craft land, actually had encounters with beings, sleep paralysis, been taken, close encounters of the fourth kind, abduction, implants, the whole deal. It's all in the film. It's all in the film. And when Fox News, you know, goes, and you know, the typical announcer voice, we've discovered that there seems to be an uptick in UFO sightings are at an all-time high, and they show the graph. And what are we to think of this? I mean, here's the deal, guys. You know, when I was born in 1950, and I'm dating myself, and that's fine, okay? December of 1950, there's one UFO reported, one UFO. You fast forward to a couple years ago, it's like 1,000. So, you know, it's real, burgeoning, not going away, and yet most people don't want to talk about it. This is the coming great deception, in my opinion. When they show up, and they will show up at some point, because this cat and mouse game has been going on for flipping decades. Decades, they show up, they disappear. They show up, they disappear. I mean, if you're really from Zeta Reticuli, you know, hello, right? You know, what are you guys doing? Come on down here. We're tired of this nonsense, you know. I mean, seriously, right? But no one does that. They never show up. They never land on the White House lawn, and it just goes on and on and on. So look, for 20 years, I wrestled with this one part of scripture. You had to ask me a question, didn't you? But this for about 20 years, I've been wrestling with this, and it's from 2 Thessalonians, and it's controversial. And it says this, Paul's writing. He says, do not be troubled by word or deed or letter that has come to you, that the day of the Lord and our gathering to him has happened, because that will not happen until the great falling away or the falling away or the departure. And when you go online and you do an exhaustive study, there's all sorts of commentaries. The prevailing dominant view is that the word apostasia means apostasy. It's an actual breaking. It's a divorce. It's a marriage. Okay. But then the minority view is that we're taken up. It's the rapture. So which is it? You know, it's typical. It's like we've got one scripture and 25 comments and different positions on one scripture. And I've wrestled with this for years. I now think, this is my latest phrase, that we go up, they show up. We go up, they show up. We go up, they come down. And that gets into the whole restrainer. Here's the deal. Think about this. There's 1.8 billion Christians on the planet. 1.2 billion of those are Catholic. With all due respect to our Catholic brethren, they don't have an eschatological dog in the hunt. They just don't. They're not looking for the same thing that most of us are looking for. They're just not. They're not taught end time prophecies like most of us are. So whether you're pre, mid, or post, let's just throw that on the back burner for a second. It really doesn't matter. The fact is 1.2 billion Catholics are already out of the equation. They're not looking for the rapture of a second coming. They look at Israel and say, well, you know, nice coincidence, who cares, right? For those of us who look at that, there's a differentiation between the church and Israel. They're two separate entities. The church is the church. Israel is Israel. It's called the time of Jacob's trouble for a reason, because it has to do with Jacob, has to do with Israel, not us, in my opinion. So the bottom line is this. I've already eliminated 1.2 billion Christians. So now you've got about, you know, 500 million left, 600 million left at the most, right? You can start narrowing that down by denomination where, I mean, I'm not going to start naming them, but you can just start winnowing out the people. There is a very small remnant, very small remnant of people on this planet that are expectant, that are looking up, that want the return of the king. Because I'll tell you something, guys, and this is a slight sidestep from what we're talking about. You can't fix this anymore. you can't fix what's going on. You can't fix the deep state. You can't fix the ideology of a Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who's once again going to run for president of Iran. Surprise, surprise. You can't fix the ideology of the mullahs who say death to Israel and death to the great Satan U.S. You can't fix the ideology of Kim Jong-un, who's worshipped as a god, basically, or the Pakistanis. If, like, you say one thing against Islam, they'll kill you. Or the idiot nurse running around in the Midwest performing female genital mutilations in the United States. Unprecedented. I mean, where am I here? You can't fix this. You can't fix $20 trillion in debt. You know, you can't fix a deep state with all their agenda and everything else. You can't go back to the Kennedy assassination and bring JFK back and shatter the CIA in 1,000 pieces. You can't. This is how far down the rabbit hole we are. You know, and then you start triggering the supernatural. All the UFOs are at an all-time high. I think we're in the window of time where something has to give. And, of course, that brings us to the saber rattling in Syria with the 59 Tomahawk missiles. I mean, is that a false flag? Why would Assad stand up and go, deep state, false flag, which is completely contradictory to what we've been told? What's the truth? Somebody just give me the flipping truth. Look, we've got AWACS. We've got all sorts of intel and satellites that are positioned right over Syria. Are you kidding me? They know exactly who dropped those, you know, those chemical weapons. They know exactly how it's been done. Why don't they show us that? If they're so sure Assad flew a plane over, show us the footage. Show us what it is. You've got the intel. You've got a satellite in fixed position, geosynchronistic orbit right over Syria, right over. I know that for a fact. I know that. I mean, they can, instead we get these ridiculous pictures of throwing some kids on the back of a truck, washing them off with a hose, then some guy with a face mask who takes it off, and somebody else is drawing blood. I mean, I don't know what those images are. And that's the problem. There's no way to vet any of this. And, you know, CNN will say one thing, Fox News will say the other. What's the truth? Truth is dead, in my opinion. With that, you get the idea. And this is only the first question. Boy, are we in for trouble. Hmm. With that, you get the idea of the Darwinian paradigm acting as a springboard. Because Darwin says that, okay, you know, all this just happened. Life just happened here on its own chance, billions of years. Ta-da! The human being with the complex systems that we have, like eye, memory, our olfactory senses, the tongue, which we can speak in language and we can hear, and the heart that beats. How does evolution know? Well, we're going to need a heart because we need a circulatory system. Why would evolution even know that? Of course it wouldn't, because it's mindless. So how does this design happen? And we know from a DNA, the spiral of life, the deoxyribonucleic acid, double helix of life, that all life is built on building blocks. All life goes back to the coding in the DNA system. The neo-Darwinists are looking out there. They're looking for, they believe in panspermia. They're waiting the aliens to come and, hey, we're your progenitors. Hey, you know, we created all life on this planet. We seeded you here. Don't believe me? Watch Ben Stein's movie Expelled. He sits down with Dawkins, and that's what Dawkins is promulgating. The Ancient Aliens show every Friday, which is tonight, they promulgate the same thing. I'm just standing here going, this is the coming great deception. This entire phenomena is based on deception, on lies, and who is the father of lies? It's right out of the pit of hell.
Ellie, to the real quick, back to the UFO statistics. What, if any, is the correlation between technology and these sightings?
There definitely is a correlation, and we don't know how much is back engineered. What we're seeing in the sky, is it ours that's been back engineered? Is it theirs? In 1962 or 63, I saw my first UFO. I saw a second one much later, about 9 years ago, but it was not anything like this. In 62, it was the classic disc. I mean, we show, there's actually a clip in the beginning of the film, in their own words, The Watchmen Chronicles, where we show that disc. And that's, you know, thanks to Jaime Maussan for letting us use the footage. I mean, it's a classic UFO, about 60 to 80, 100 feet wide. The classic dome shape, I mean, the flying saucer. And I'm out there with three other Boy Scouts at Camp Horseshoe, Rising Sun, Maryland. I can take you to a map at Camp Horseshoe. I can show you the trail I was on, and I can take you on that trail and show you exactly where I was, providing they haven't changed the topography too much. But the trail is still there, and I know where the trail is. And we're walking up, and it's like a dry creek bed with all these boulders, and we're hopping from boulder to boulder, and there's four of us. There's one, two, three, and I'm the fourth guy in line. And I'm like 12 years old. It's a shortcut. The lead guy goes, wow, what's that? The other kids chime in, wow, what is that? And I turn and I go, where? And they go, there. And they point and I look up. It's the classic silver disc and the sunlight is like glinting off of it. And we're just blown away. We've never seen anything like this at all. And I got to tell you something, guys. When you see it, it's mesmerizing. We saw it for at least 20 seconds. It might have been longer. There was no missing time. This thing was here, and all of a sudden it just went like this. Boop, gone. And as the way my hand went up like that, out of the shot, that's how fast this thing. It just went, wow. And we ran back to camp. We saw a UFO. We saw a flying saucer. I'll never forget. We're standing there, the four of us, and all these kids come out of the cabins, and the scoutmasters come out, you know, and all the leaders and stuff, and they're all gathered around us, and we're like, not hysterical, but we're hysterical. You know what I mean? We saw a UFO, we saw a flying saucer, and we're telling everybody what it looked like, how it departed, the whole thing. By 5 o'clock that night, because remember, this is the lunch hour, we're taking a shortcut back to get those, you know, barbecued weenies that everybody loves so much, right? So by 5 o'clock that night, the other three boys denied anything. They said they just made it up. I, on the other hand, your your bearer of truth and integrity, refused to back down. And I was called all sorts of horrible names because I stuck to my story. It was my first lesson in herd mentality, that people will deny the truth in order to become part of the herd, stay part of the herd. They'll deny what they see with their own eyes to stay in fellowship with the herd, whatever the herd is doing. And I just went, no way. I know what I saw, and I'm not backing down. So, you know,
if I can interject something here, I don't want to take you off your stride, but I think this is relevant. And I've never talked about this before. I was a young man back in 1966, July 31st, 1966, in our hometown. We've got a peninsula here in northwest Pennsylvania. It's Presque Isle Peninsula. It juts out into the bay. Lake Erie, Bay, and then, of course there's Lake Erie, but July 31st, 1966, on this peninsula right around sunset, a little afterwards, there was this big, huge, situation where a light came from the sky and, hovered over the treetop level, disc shape, according to some witnesses. There were about a half a dozen witnesses. In fact, a group of young kids, not children, teens got their, or teenagers got their car stuck in the sand. They're waiting for help. The reports on that day, on July 31st, the newspaper reports the next day, I should say, said that the craft, whatever it was, landed. There was the vibrations around. There was concurrent with that, or following that, there were sightings of, quote, Bigfoot. This was a Bigfoot type creature. Now just put that on hold for a second. Going back to the sighting of the craft. And I remember this. In fact, there were six names in the newspaper on August 2nd, 1966. The six people who witnessed this whole event of this craft landing. Okay. The Air Force came up here. There was the civil defense at that time came up here. They measured for radiation. They said they found none. However, the state police officer who I worked with in 1987-88 investigated that incident as well. They impounded a car briefly, that had scratch marks on the top and the vinyl, or not vinyl, but cloth, soft top of this vehicle where this unknown Bigfoot kind of Yeti looking whatever it was had scratched the top portion of the car. Two separate incidents, however, closely related to one another in terms of approximate time. What I found interesting was the Air Force sent up people from the Youngstown, Ohio Air Base. I can't remember what it's called down there in Ohio, but nonetheless, nothing was ever found and nothing further was ever said. This was the talk of our town back then. For a week, and I, again, speaking with the investigator who responded as a police officer for the state police at the time, said that, man, there was something there. We don't know what it was, but it's not being reported in its entirety. And he's since passed on, without me being able to get the full story. But isn't this something, how you're talking about these incidents? And, well, I don't know. I had to share that. I don't think I've ever talked about that before, but you got me talking about it. Go ahead.
You know, and here's the deal, guys. that, I mean, you know that the town was talking about it. And did any pastor address that? Did anyone from, you know, our neck of the woods address it? Most of they just stay away from it. And see, this is the problem. Here in America, anybody who talks about the UFOs gets to wear their tinfoil hat. And that's why I display mine very proudly right here behind her. And you can also see this. This is a tinfoil hat area. And, you know, I kind of do it tongue in cheek because it's got to stop. The nonsense, the ridicule, anybody who wants to talk about an encounter is immediately branded a conspiracy theorist, a tinfoil hat wearer, and every other derogatory name. And this is, it's worked. This is precisely what the powers that be have done. And you can even see it on Fox News or whatever. When they report on a UFO sighting, they always yuck it up. They never ever treat it like seriously. Well, Bob, you know, we had those little gray men are back again. That's right, Ted. And here to talk about it is, you know, Jenny. Jenny, what did you see? And they passed the mic. Well, I looked up and I saw this UFO. And, you know, they all kind of yuck the thing up and everybody laughs and they all go home and, you know, well, I'll see you at the game on Saturday. And it's like, this is wacky. Look, the phenomenon is real, is burgeoning, is not going away. This is why when I'm at several places, I'm at a church down in his presence down in Alabama. I'm at the Koinonia House Conference in Ohio. Both of these places have upwards of 1,000 people. And I ask, how many of you have seen UFOs, lights in the sky, and an encounter with a being, sleep paralysis, raise your hand? About 30% in both of these places raised their hand. 30%. I remember the pastor's son in Alabama sitting there in the second row like this. It's like, what's this guy doing here, right? And so when I asked that question, he came up to me afterwards and he said, L.A., I was like, Mr. Skeptic, I thought this whole thing is a bunch of hooey. I thought we'd have one or two people raise their hand. He told me he was flabbergasted when he looked behind him and saw what amounted to be a couple of hundred hands up in the air. He was completely blown away by that. Folks, it's time we start talking about this phenomena because it is being held back, in my opinion. I think it's literally being restrained.
In L.A., let's, one of the reasons that you're on today is to talk about the Watchmen Chronicles, your DVD series. The UFO experience that you talked about, one of the questions here is why, what made you want to make and what made you get into the Watchmen Chronicle idea and to put that into motion? Was that your own personal experience? Was it others' experiences or both?
Well, it's a combination. We've made 10 Watchers films under the umbrella of the Watchers series. And this is a step away from that. We did 10. That series is pretty much closed down. Richard Shaw and I did 10 shows together, but I felt it was time for me to go off on my own. I produced, directed, and did all the editing on it. And the reason for this is content. There are things I have to say, want to say, need to say. And when you get, you know, you guys know this, you get two or three people in a room, everyone's pulling on ideas. Well, I want to do this, and I want to do this. And I just felt it was time to step away. There's no animus between Rick and I. He's a great guy. I love him. But it was just time to move off on my own and create this series. And the impetus from it, the nexus was, again, going out to conferences and just asking for a show of hands and then going, my gosh, people have seen this stuff. And then my next thing was, hey, if you want to come on camera with me and tell me about your story, come on camera. And we do this. We have everything. There's probably 20 people that come on the record in their own words. UFOs are real, the Watchmen Chronicles. Everything from lights in the sky to craft to being taken on the craft, missing time, being put down. The cold car was taken, shape-shifting entities, the whole gamut. And these people are telling it in their own words. Without this film, for the most part, they'd never had this type of a platform. And so everybody in the film is a born-again, spirit-filled Christian. Some instances, some experiences happened before they were Christians. Others happened after they were Christians. And there's also this one thing, you know, throughout the entire story. And you guys know this, having interviewed hundreds of people. You can tell when somebody's pulling your leg, for the most part. You get a feel that this guy's not a straight shooter. He's not telling me the truth here. And you know that. Everybody looks right at the camera. They tell their story. in their own words. And that's really, you know, the idea for the film. I teamed up with a CGI guy, a computer generated imagery graphic design artist, Wesley Sangiorgi, who did a bang up job. So as let's say Al, who is one of the centerpieces of the film, Al is talking about the first time he has the UFO encounter. All of a sudden, you know, Al is continuing, but Wesley has brought it to life. We see a skating rink, you know, in Canada in the middle of winter, and they're out there skating, and all of a sudden three UFOs appear. So as he's telling the story, you know, it's all moving. So it's not just people in front of a camera. We've recreated a lot of the stories, which is fantastic. So it really moves the entire film along. And I got to tell you, we've had just great reports from people, that have watched the film. And, I mean, just glowing reports saying, thank you for doing this. And, you know, it's been really cool. So it's been great, for me to get those kind of reports from people who've watched the film. And we're already working on number two, and number three and four are actually up on the drawing board. So
has that created or spawned additional reports to you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you know, what's interesting about this, Doug and Joe, or Joe and Doug, however, you know, whatever it is. I've been asking people, if you've got photographs, if you want to come on Skype, come on. So I do like these updates on YouTube. My YouTube channel, L.A. Marzulli, we're up to like 55,000 subscribers in less than 14 months, which for me, I'm just really proud of that. So we're getting about 1,000 new subscribers a week now. It's taking off. But if you have a story and you want to come, email me at la@lamarzulli.net. If you want to come on the record, we can do a Skype call. I'll film the whole thing and we'll talk about it. It's become sort of like a little UFO hub here. I talked to a guy today, he's got missing time. He saw a craft. He's got some pictures that he sent. And this is ongoing. When you go to the YouTube channel, you'll hear. So even though the film is done, and I'm not going to go back and do In Their Own Words, UFOs Are Real Volume 2, although that may happen later on. Who knows? It's great because what it does is it gets people talking. So already it's beginning to happen. Already people are coming out of the woodwork and they're talking. And I love that. I think it's fantastic.
Hello, we got about, we got about a minute and a half until, the break. And we have the break in the middle of this hour. In the next hour, we'll skip the middle break, to keep the flow going. What is the central theme of this, latest The Watchmen Chronicle?
Well, basically, you know, the central theme, of course, is really to warn the church, but also to try to get pastors to begin to discuss this. There are, at the end of the film, and this isn't really a spoiler alert, but at the end of the film, several pastors come on. There's pastors all the way through it. We've got a man by the name of Pastor Frank Bolella from Living Word Community Church in New Jersey. We've got Carmen McIndotti from the Poconos, who's also a pastor. Pastor Matt Fisher from that same church in the Poconos. To name just three of the pastors, Pastor Billy Crone, whom I know you guys know, comes on the record. Paul McGuire comes on the record. Gary Stearman comes on the record. All talking about that, you know what, folks? We need to start discussing this. The church needs to wake up and begin. People, what does this have to do with salvation? That's what I get. Oh, LA, this has nothing to do with people's salvation. That's what the naysayers will say. And I go, look, Paul tells us that once we're saved, we don't need to continually go back to the doctrine of salvation. We don't need to, you know, as believers, we now move on to maturity. And so, you know, I'll give a salvation message. I have no problem with that. But the bottom line is, what I'm doing is for believers, to arm the believer to understand that these times that we're living in are basically unprecedented. And that if a mile wide craft lands or shows itself and just hovers there tomorrow, that's it. It's the game changer. Again, I think as we go up, they show up, because I think the Spirit of the Living God is restraining this phenomenon. I mean, and you know what's interesting, guys? You know, guess where the hotspot is? California.
In the Watchmen Chronicles. Before the break, LA, you were talking about the most UFO sightings are seen in California?
Yeah, which is sort of humorous. That's my state, the communist state of California, where our governor now has to tax us even more by adding another 13 cents to the gas tax. Thanks a lot, Governor Brown. Because no matter how much money they give them, it's never quite enough. Just like Judge Report's record taxes, this last quarter, and they still can't balance the budget. Drain the Swamp, I mean, we can go down that rabbit hole. It has nothing to do with the film, so I'll make it brief. But the bottom line is, you know, until we drain the swamp and get rid of the career politicians, the American people are hosed. That's why I got Mitch McConnell going, well, you know, we can't get around the tax reform maybe till next year. Meanwhile, I'm paying upwards of 50% of my income to the state and feds. Are you kidding me? So California is the hot spot. There's several reasons for it. It's a very large state, but it's also on the ocean. And right outside my window, literally, when I'm up on my upper deck and I live in the Santa Monica Mountains, I've got a view down the canyon. It's a blue water view. I've been up here since 1978. It was the boondocks when I moved up here. There still are no sidewalks or street lamps or anything like that. I'm on well water. I have two water wells. So that gives you an idea. You know, it's the boonies here. So when I moved here in 1978, people laughed. It's like, you know, tune your banjo type thing. And it was definitely, you know, a little redneck. And we won't go into that. Outside, when I look down the window, I can see St. Nicholas Island, some of the Channel Islands, and the remains of a Nephilim, in my opinion, giants upwards of 9 feet tall have been found on those islands. What's interesting is that trench between the Channel Islands and where we are is one of the deepest trenches in all the oceans of the world. That baby is really, really deep. And that's the place to hide. They can just sit there and who's going to find them? Nobody's going to find them, nor will they see them. Now, a pastor friend, again, this is Gary Zephyrus, who's a pastor friend in Malibu here, and he's got a house that perches up on a bluff lot and looks out at the ocean. He's got an amazing, amazing view. And he's sitting there one night, and he saw like six or seven of these things doing this. Meow, 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 just like that, all over the ocean. Now, he didn't get any photographs of it, but that just gives you an idea. There's a hot spot out here. There's no doubt. But the United States of America leads in UFO sightings over any other country. And isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and I think with Sandeo, once those latest figures about the UFO sightings came out and came out by country, we kind of went over this a little bit, and we were wondering, is it a lack of reporting from countries like Russia and China versus, you know, the Western nations like Australia, the U.S., some areas in South America, they have, you know, pretty frequent sightings, but there seemed to be a blackout from other parts of the world. And we figured that was due to the governments and the cultures there. And you talk about hotspots up here in Pennsylvania over Lake Erie. We have a hotspot here too. And, for years I would be outside with my telescope and just with my naked eye. And I've seen some very interesting things that I still am not able to describe. And, you know, I had all the, you know, I had the Stellarium on my computer. I had satellite trackers and flight trackers to make sure I wasn't seeing, you know, things that could be explained. But I know what you're talking about with the hotspots, and it's a very, it's very elusive, but it's very interesting at the same time. And we don't have to go too far down this road, but I guess my question would be, you know, you talked about the spiritual implications of this. You know, we'll say when the church goes away, these people come. These are spiritual entities. What are they coming here now for? What would be the purpose of them? I mean, they don't need practice, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, they don't. They don't need practice.
So what would be the purpose?
It's a very complex issue to discuss. Very complex. And, you know, there are people who maintain that, oh, this is all demonic delusion and it's really not happening. And if you hear that, folks, in my opinion, run to the nearest exit because it's a bunch of hooey. I've been doing this for, I don't know, since 1990, do the math. Almost, you know, it's been a while, right? And almost 30 years. And before that, when I was 16, you know, I saw my first one at 12. And basically all through my teenage years, Eric Von Däniken's Chariots of the Gods. I mean, I was a follower. I was a new age guy, had a guru, and didn't come to Christ till I was 30 years old, which is now 37 years ago. So, you know, I've been following this forever. And in the film, we have people that have had encounters. And it's not demonic delusion. That's why our Watchers series and Watchers 7 and 8, when we took out Bill's implant, people used to laugh, you know, 15 years ago when I began talking about this. And this same crowd of people within the church insisted that all this was demonic delusion. Well, we took the implant out. It's on film. That's not demonic delusion. So what are we looking at? Plus, that implant vanished. We couldn't find it. which is a 3-hour conversation. Something is going on here. The bottom line is this, that this cat and mouse game will continue. And in the meantime, there is a breeding program. Dr. David Jacob talks about it. Other people talk about it. And the reports that come across my desk, okay, and I'm gonna read you one, okay? I'll change the names. And this is what we do on my YouTube channel. As stuff comes across, and folks, if you're listening, you have a story, la@lamarzulli.net, la@lamarzulli.net. And, you know, you can email me the story. I mean, if you've got pictures, that's even better, because, I mean, this is kind of what we do here. Let me see if I can get it here. Oh, come on now. Where is it? I don't believe this.
That always happens, doesn't it?
it never fails. I go to my file and it's not there. The bottom line is this, and I talk to this woman. She's driving, and there are these two entities on the sidewalk, and they're at a place, and it's like they're at the corner, but they're not sure what to do, and she senses they don't know what to do, and they she looks at them, and then she realizes as she drives by that they're not human. I want to read another one, because this will be really interesting, and I've got this one right in front of me now, so you can check this out, okay? Dear LA, I've been holding on to this info for a long time, and for still some reason, though, I'm afraid to share it. But I'm sharing it to hopefully gain some information of just what we saw that day. In June, I was with my husband and daughter at our local county fair. While my daughter was on a ride, we noticed two younger-looking people walking around to the left of us, heading towards the ride. We stood and watched these two, which looked male and female, possibly brother and sister. They looked very similar. They moved in sync, and not at all like human walks. So right off the bat, this person writing to me knows that something's off here. One tried to gain access to the ride, and the gate was shut. The carnival worker stuck out his hand like, hey, what the heck are you doing? They stood waiting together for the ride to end. So normal people don't do that. Hybrids will, because hybrids haven't grown up with this. So they're coming into the culture and for the most part have no idea how to really interact with this. Let's continue. My gut was in check. First honest thoughts were these kids were high on drugs. My husband and I both gave each other the same look, like these guys are really messed up. My daughter got off the ride and began to walk away. I turned back to look. Here it is. And these two people, these two entities were standing there with their necks arched up in an impossible way and smirking at me. This was broad daylight, and I couldn't believe it. I didn't say anything in front of my daughter, but I knew what I saw was not human, but acting like a human. I saw these two weirdos. They must have been on drugs, and then maybe I could have tried to forget what I saw. Instead, my husband looked straight me in the eye. My husband looked at me straight in the eye and said, they were not human. My heart just sunk. These beings are some type of reptilian who had physical human-looking bodies were at our small town fair. This is no joke or deranged fantasy. I wish I had never seen them, and it had been confirmed by another witness, my husband. I am a believer in Jesus Christ. I'm an evangelist. I've seen incredible things in my life, even angels. But I have never seen anything like I did that day, and I need to know if there are others out there who have witnessed the same thing. I believe it's important to try to understand what kind of purpose and threat these beings have and what we can do about it. And there you go. So here's this woman holding on to this since 2012, afraid to tell anybody. But she'll tell me because she knows I won't laugh at her. She knows I won't ridicule her, and she knows I believe her story, and I do. And the bottom line is there is a breeding program going on. And that's a very deep conversation. It's very unsettling. It's very unnerving. However, I would point the careful biblical student back to Genesis 3:15, which is when I sign books at conferences, I write Gen 3.15. And there's a reason for it, because I believe it's the pre-incarnate Jesus is in the garden. Adam and Eve are over there. HaSatan, the serpent, is over here. Okay? And Jesus says this, talking of a serpent, your seed, the seed of a serpent, will be at war at enmity with the seed of the woman. He, Messiah, will crush your head. You will bruise his heel. That sets up, in my opinion, the rest of the biblical prophetic narrative. Now, there are people that want to tap dance around this and tell us that the seed of a serpent really isn't the seed of a serpent. Mm-hmm. That's not really what it means. But it is. Three chapters later in Genesis 6, that's what we see. This seed war, as Gary Stearman calls it, has gone on since before the flood, since the garden, the days of the garden, and comes up to modernity. And what does Jesus warn us? It'll be like the days of Noah when I return. So there you go. In the days of Noah, the Nephilim were on the earth, and that was the seed of the serpent. And this is why, unless we understand Genesis 3:15, when we get to Genesis 6, we're clueless. When we get to the Tower of Babel, we're even more clueless. When we get to Sodom and Gomorrah, we have no idea what's going on. And when we get to the Promised Land and the Nephilim tribes are there, well, I guess that's just genocide. See where it goes? And then when Jesus says it'll be like the days of Noah at the coming of the Son of Man, what differentiates the days of Noah? And in my opinion, it is the presence of the Nephilim on this planet. And look, I've had dozens, literally dozens of people who have encounters with black-eyed kids, hybrid entities, shapeshifters. This stuff is real. And you know what? Doug and Joe, it's manifesting more. More and more and more. Why? Because we're in the last days. We're in the end times. And that's why this stuff is being seen.
And you make a few good points there. I want to kind of focus on the hybrids, because one of the interesting points here is the hybrids among us. You have a few stories in the Watchmen Chronicles about people's personal encounters, and I think one in particular is a man named Al.
Yes.
But this is always fascinating to me, the hybrids among us. Some people, and folks, you can go on YouTube and see videos where you'll have YouTubers pointing out, I guess you'd call them reptilian tendencies on newscasters or people being interviewed and whatnot. And, you know, it's kind of, I mean, you can see it if you look. But what are some of the things that are going on that people are encountering with these hybrids that we won't see on YouTube?
And you're not. Al's story is very, very unnerving. And in some ways, Al's testimony is sort of the centerpiece of the film. I mean, there's a lot of people that come and go in the film that talk about their encounters in their own words. That's the title of the film. And Al does so too. And, you know, it didn't start this way. When I interviewed Al, I flew to Vancouver to interview him, and I was taken aback by his story. And we basically, he appears three different times in the film. The first time, which we talked about already, is his ice skating rink. That's the first time he has an encounter with these craft. And all the other boys go inside, and he's standing out in the rink, looking up at them, going, you know, I want to know what you are. And as he says that, he's hit with this warm feeling of peace and love. It's like an angelic feeling. And of course, I believe that that's part of a deception. And later on, he flees the eastern coast of Canada because the abductions and the encounters have become so strange and so unnerving. And he talks about this in one of the segments in the film. He's driving in his car. He's coming home from work. He's going about a mile away from his exit where he's going to turn. It's 5 minutes from his cottage, right? He goes past the exit with no discernment. So he knows he's about to be switched off. He knows that. Yet he keeps driving. 4 hours later, and again, Wesley Sangiorgi brings all this to life with his incredible CGI that he does, where we see Al in the car and he's vibrating. 4 hours later, the entire car has been taken by the craft, the entire car. And the car is being lowered from the craft like this, lowered from the craft in this white, brilliant stream of light, unlike anything you've ever seen. And Al's in the front seat like this, shaking, vibrating. And the car lands on the road. The car starts itself, and the car drives itself for a period of time until Al can reach up and grab the wheel. And he realizes, get this, 4 hours of missing time, and he's about 120 kilometers from where he was supposed to be. That's just one story. What do you do with that? With that? But getting back into the shapeshifter. So he flees the East Coast of Canada because of that experience. He told me after that experience, he went back to his cottage. He crawled up into a fetal position on the bed and cried and said, why me? What's going on? And he fled the East Coast and went out to Vancouver. So now it's years later. And for the most part, he's not been hassled. He's trying to get a normal life. He's still not a Christian at this point. And, he's working for a moving company, and he's told that this woman from Kuwait is coming in with a container. So he drives to the place and he's waiting for the woman to show up, and the woman shows up, and, she's a very pretty gal. And, she gets out of the car and they exchange pleasantries, small talk, and he's going to move the furniture into her flat for her and, you know, unload the car. And he's just making small talk with her, saying like, well, you know, why did you move from Kuwait? It's so beautiful there now that the war's over. And she turns to him and the conversation changes. She changes and she goes, there's going to be another war. And, you know, it gets really strange. And, a couple of hours later, then they're in the elevator going up to where her stuff is. And, she leans over and she whispers in his ear, they're listening. They're listening. And he goes, Al goes, who's listening? And this woman, whose name is Diane, goes, you know, Al, the Grays. We were supposed to meet. That's what she tells him. And I know that you've been abducted many times, and so have I, and we were supposed to meet. That's what she tells him. Now, at this point, she's never met him. All this is on film. I mean, and Wesley does a great job of bringing it to life. And she goes, he's completely taken aback by this, but they've never met. She has no idea who he is or what he's experienced. They've never met before. And I ask him, I say, you know, did you know this lady? I mean, have you talked to her before? No. So why is this going on? And he's absolutely, you know, flabbergasted and freaked out basically at this point, because, she's saying things that, how does she know he's been taken many times? So he's very curious about how she knows all this, and he gives her his phone number. And in the film, I go, mistake number one, and we both laugh about it. And sure enough, 2 weeks later, she calls him on the phone and invites him up. Hey, why don't you come up over to my friend's house? We'll have some drinks, you know, have some fun, whatever. So he goes to the place, and he knows he shouldn't go, but he goes anyway because he wants to find out more. He wants to find out how this woman knows so much about him. So he walks up. Oh, one thing I forgot to tell you. All the time, from the moment he met this woman till the very end, she's got these very, very dark sunglasses on, and they wrap around her head. They're tight to her eyes, and they wrap around the sides of her head, so no light can get in. And at this point, he's figuring, well, she's got an eye problem or something going on there. You know, she's very sensitive to light, but that's what he's thinking to himself. So she comes, they buzz Al up. Al goes up to this flat. She introduces Al to her friend. She's still wearing these very dark glasses, and they're having wine and making small talk. And they've got these huge goblets of wine, and one of them is set down in front of Al. And so Al looks over, and there's a very large, for those of you who know what a deer fly is or a horse fly, they're really big. They're like, they can be like an inch long. There's basically this horrendous black fly around the rim of her wine glass. And he goes, and it's not moving. And he goes, let me get a Kleenex. I'll get it for you. And she says this, no, I'll get it, Al. And she reaches over to the wine glass, right, with her finger extended. And she doesn't grab the fly. The fly sticks to her index finger, and she brings it up to her mouth about this far away and goes like that and sucks it in. And at this point, Al is completely freaked out. because we're not in Kansas anymore. At this point, she takes off her glasses, and she goes and sits on Al's lap. And I stop the interview right there. I go, Al, you've got a girlfriend. What? Is this normal behavior? And he goes, no, I don't, you know, it's not normal behavior. I go, why would you allow it? You wouldn't allow this to happen. He goes, yeah, I know. But he's like perplexed. Why is this happening? Her glasses are off and she leans in to kiss him. At this point, he pushes her away. All right. And her eyes shapeshift. Her eyes go from human to what can only be called reptilian. And she lets out, in his own words, in Al's words, the most evil laugh he's ever heard in his life. And he flees the place and she's running after him and he flees the place and he comes back to a mutual friend of ours, Gordy Tong. And I talked to him like hours after this happened. He's completely freaked out. We Skyped. I prayed for him on the phone. And oh, I don't want to give the spoiler alert because we save it to the very end of the film. But most of you understand that dealing with me and Gordy Tong, we led him at some point to a relationship with Jesus. So that's the good news. But Al goes on the record and he says, you know, I now know that the Bible is true, but it took this to get me to here. I used to scoff at the Bible. I didn't believe it. It's all a bunch of hooey, but it took this episode to push me to find an answer. And we had the answers for him. And since then, he has not had an abduction. So hybrid entities are real. They are walking amongst us. You know, people can scoff at that. Hopefully you'll never see one. I don't want to see one. But when you do, all bets are off. And I've got another one. I know we're getting close to break. If you want one, I can.
LA, that's why I'm glad I'm not in the dating pool anymore.
Yeah, no kidding.
But we got 3 minutes. Wow. Yeah, we got 3 minutes. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Here's a story, and I'll keep this guy's anonymous, and I'll just do it in his own words. I am a college student. I am a large man, about 5'11", and weigh about 325. I lift weights, but also have a high body fat count, which I'm currently working on. Buying clothes is always a task for me. They're either too small or not enough variety at local stores. So this guy's big. I'm 6 feet. So, but I'm only like 190, 185, 190. So 325? I mean, are you kidding me? The guy's huge, right? I recently ordered a pair of pants from Amazon. They were military style combat pants, black in color with side pockets. I ordered these because of a trip to Florida in which I would be attending a series of public events and I would need the space. I received them in the mail and noticed a distinct error in the size. They were enormous. I am large, but could easily have fit another version of me inside of them. I called Amazon to complain and they told me to send them back and they would refund the money. I complained and I just wanted the correct size and not a refund. The person I was speaking to hung up the phone. This is where it goes into the Twilight Zone. Now this is where it gets strange. I received a call back almost immediately from a person saying they were a second tier customer support from Amazon. The number was unlisted, but the name Amazon came up. I was told by a man that I will have the current shipment picked up and a suitable replacement delivered. Stop right there. Nobody does that. Nobody does that for a pair of pants. Okay? That's off the charts wacky. You know, Amazon's not going to send a driver out to me because I got the wrong pant size. Ain't going to happen. And by the way, we need to pray for this guy because what happens? Do we have enough time to finish the story, you think?
Well, why don't you hold it right there?
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Cliffhanger.
This is fascinating. And you're right. Amazon does not do that. In fact, I don't know of any place that does that, but I'd be looking at those pants in a big way. For a lot of reasons, I can't wait to hear what does happen. Folks, before we get to the break, again, I want to remind everyone, Awaken to the Shaken, May 5th and 6th, please register. It's free. Registration's free. It's in Gurnee, Illinois. If you're within a day's drive of that, you can't beat it. And you visit Paul Begley's website or visit thehagmanreport.com, hagmanandhagman.com. There you'll find the banner ad for that. Please, let's blow the doors out, blow the walls out, because what we will do there, Russ Dizzar is going to be there, Pastor Paul Begley, Joe, myself, what we're going to be talking about is some pretty heavy duty things. Joe's got his
ready. I'm ready to go. It's going to be fabulous. So Awaken to the Shaken May 5th and 6th. It's coming fast. So please register to guarantee your spot. All right.
And our guest this hour and through the next hour is L.A. Marzulli. His website is lamarzulli.net. We're talking about the Watchmen Chronicle special. He's got his latest DVD out on the Watchmen Chronicles. Make sure you get that also. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report, this Friday edition, Good Friday edition, as we're joined by L.A. Marzulli. His website is lamarzulli.net, and he's coming on to talk about the latest in the Watchmen Chronicles series. And folks, Ellie's doing a special for listeners of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Go to HagmanReport.com. On the right-hand side, if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see the banner ad for the Watchmen Chronicles. Actually, it's bigger than a banner ad. And there, how much did you say that? 40% off? It's discounted for Hagman.
It's a special listeners. For Hagman listeners.
Yeah. And
it's fantastic, actually. I think it's his best work ever. And how he described it too early on. I gotta tell you, Ellie, it makes it come alive. That CGI addition, that's a Hollywood production. I mean, really. It really is. So kudos to you on that.
Thank you. Wesley did a good job. One quick correction. Acceleration Radio is now on KGRA on Tuesday night, 6 o'clock. KGRA, Tuesday night, 6 o'clock. I gotta change it on the website. Sorry, guys.
No problem.
Okay, KGRA. And
again, folks, if you go to HagmanReport.com on the right-hand side, the Watchmen Chronicles, is there. If you click on that, you can, or if you access it from LA's site, you can see a trailer for, the latest in the Watchmen Chronicles series. And the special is buy one DVD at $19.99 and get the second one half off.
Give it to your pastor.
Or your friend. Absolutely. And LA, thank you so much for putting that special together for our listeners. Let's get back to the Amazon pants story.
Yeah, I got to hear this, brother.
Yeah, it gets really weird. now, this is where it gets strange. I received a call back almost immediately from a person saying they were a second-tier customer support from Amazon. The number was unlisted, but the name Amazon came up. I was told by a man that I will have the current shipment picked up and a suitable replacement delivered. As we said before the break, no one does that. Before I could ask who was picking them up and when, they hung up. I called Amazon and they had no record of the call. Around 8:30 that night, I got a knock on the door and two men claiming they were from Amazon were standing there. Both of them were very tall.
Tommy Lee Jones and who else? Yeah, go on.
Yeah, both of them were very tall, close to 7 feet. They had no facial hair and were bald. They had a very musty odor like a wet dog. And they spoke in unison, finishing each other's sentences. My dog went crazy. I had to put her in her crate. These men had a clear plastic bag with the correct size pants and asked for the wrong ones back in exchange. I was leery, but in somewhat of a rush as I was packing for a trip and leaving in a few hours. I didn't question them much because they had known about the size and had to add a replacement. Then he goes, the difference in the size of the pants. As I reached a third-party company for future direct purchases, they disappeared from Amazon's website completely. When I called Amazon to look at my order history, I found the company I purchased these from changes their name every so often. And he goes on from there. Now, I spoke to this guy, and I basically, he told me two things since this incident happened. He said that their skin was almost translucent and they arrived in a four-door black sedan. They were wearing black hats like a fedora. These were essentially, in my opinion, men in black. They were not human. They were hybrid entities, in my opinion. Since this experience, his iPhone was hacked into. He took it to get fixed. They said, well, your SIM card is completely erased. Did you change your SIM card? He goes, no. He goes, well, all his contacts gone. Same thing with his iPad. All information completely wiped out. So I told him, and you know, we need to pray for this guy. We'll just call him George, because he needs to remain anonymous. But I said, look, you stumbled into something that you shouldn't. And what you need to do, is call a family member that you know and trust and tell your story to the family member and let them know in no uncertain terms that if something happens to you, like suicide, you didn't do it. That's what you need to do. Because this is like veiled threats. They're messing with the guy's phone. They erased all his, he stumbled into something. And the fact that these pants were probably for someone 9 or 10 feet tall. Do with that what you will. That's how far down the rabbit hole we are.
Okay, LA. Now, let me ask this. And I know you, but let's speculate here. What in the heck would Amazon be doing with? Okay, I'm trying to think in what situation a company, and I suppose third party vendors, right? I'm trying to think this through. How Amazon would ship that out by accident. Why, under what circumstances? But I guess you have third parties that fulfill orders, right? I guess that's the answer.
It was a third party that fulfilled the order. And this third party wound up sending these two clowns to this guy's house.
Wow.
And, you know, the dog freaks out, musty odor, no facial hair. They talk in unison. I mean, come on. You know, they're very tall, almost 7 feet tall. I mean, you know, this is, look, if it's just one story like this, then, you know, we dismiss it. But even in the film, we talk about people that have had encounters with entities, with orbs, you know, with disc-shaped craft, missing time. I mean, it's very, very, very unsettling. And again, getting back to the reason why I made the film was to try to get people to discuss it, to talk about it. To understand that we're living in a period of time that this stuff is manifesting in ways that none of us would ever have imagined, like 20, 25 years ago. And the stuff that comes across my desk on a daily basis, because I've given out my email address and I'm saying, if you have a story, if you've got pictures, please send them. And it's becoming like a little UFO hub here, with everything from encounters. I saw a disc to I've been taken. I've been taken multiple times. I've got missing time. I think I have an implant. I mean, it's all across the board. So I think the film, in their own words, The Watchmen Chronicles, I think is timely. Obviously, if one landed tomorrow or just showed up like in the New York skyline that you guys have behind you, that's a game changer. And I mean, I just try to flail my arms and warn the church and people at large that it is coming. It's not a question of if, it's just a question of when.
Okay. Does this, and help me out here, LA, because I'm not sure you're the expert in this, but we're seeing a lot of weird stuff go on in Antarctica. Is this related to what you're talking about? Could what's going on in Antarctica be this, related to disclosure, UFO activity, or do we know?
I am trying to vet Antarctica as best I can. The problem is I've had people that have emailed me, but there's no way to vet anything.
Right.
And that's the problem. And having been fooled by the fairy in Watchers 10, and the moment we found out it was a confabulation, we went on the record. We created a free DVD, and you can go to my Vimeo account, L.A. Marzulli, and watch The Anatomy of a Hoax for free and see how we discovered what it was. But it fooled three veterinarians and DNA guys and everybody else in Mexico and up here until we got the creature here in America and we were able to take it apart. So that has made me, not that I wasn't a skeptic before, because even, and it's in the book Nephilim Hybrids, I state in writing in the book, more testing needs to be done on this creature. But as of now, we think it's real. It's in black and white. So, right. You know, I mean, it's like as an investigator, as a journalist, as a filmmaker, I mean, you go with the information, you try to vet things as much as possible. And then there comes a time where you just go, well, we've got, you know, people are saying it's real. Here are the x-rays. It all looks copacetic. Let's go with it, which is what we did.
Right.
This is a little different because, and let me dispel a couple of facts. You know, it's circulating that you can't go to Antarctica. You can go to Antarctica. There are planes that will take you there. There are ships that will take you there. In the summer, you can go to Antarctica. You can go there. So the fact that it's like it's somehow off limits is just a bunch of nonsense. What we do know is the Nazis were very interested in the Schwabenland. That's a matter of historical record. After that, everything is up for grabs. For instance, the one story that was circulating with Patriarch Kirill and the so-called Ark of Gabriel, that's all fake news. That comes from a site called Sorka Fall. WhatDoesItMean.com. WhatDoesItMean.com, Sorka Fall. And this guy, whoever is making it, they write false news constantly. They've done it for years. They'll just make stuff up. And it circulates. And if you don't know what the source is, people can believe it. I actually saw it on Israeli news. I think it was Israeli news. Israeli Daily News or whatever it's called. But the guy was using that story and pointing to that this is, you know, what's going on in Antarctica. And I wrote him, and on my show, I came out and said, I looked at the story. I went back to the source of the story. It is Sorka Fall, and it's a complete and utter ruse. It's a confabulation. It's a canard. It may be based on some truth, but for the most part, it's false. So we get all this information coming out of Antarctica. I'm intrigued by it because we've got the Peary Reis map, and which shows Antarctica unfrozen. How is that possible? We see the landmass. So, and that is allegedly an ancient map. Is it possible during the flood that there was a pole shift and that the fallen angels are buried there in ice? And that gets into the Holy Enochian literature. And I get that. There's a lot going on here. But before I take that leap, I need information. So I've got, like I said earlier, I've got a private eye who's doing some investigation. We're coming, trying to come in the back door with it. And I won't disclose what we're trying to do to get facts, but we're trying to get facts on it, and find out more about Admiral Byrd, more about the diary, all that kind of stuff. So that's sort of the approach that we're taking. And we'll see what turns up.
All right. Interesting. Wow. Yeah, there's that's one thing. Secondhand information, whether you're talking about the creature in that jar, and look, I understand you didn't. I mean, when you got it, you had it tested, and of course, that's when everything was disclosed. So, to me, you handled that very responsibly.
Thank you.
And this South Pole, the Antarctica thing. Yeah, we need some firsthand authenticated information. Man, there's a lot of weird stuff. I can't explain why people like John Kerry and others have gone down there. I mean, I don't know.
It's bizarre. Yeah. Very, very strange.
Yeah, exactly. Strange. And it does warrant further investigation. So, I can't wait for further, updates on that from you as well, Joe.
Yeah, and the Antarctica thing really, gets me, you know, when you had the mixture of heads of state, former astronauts, you know, military personnel, and then you have a cap on any information that comes, it's very concerning. And obviously, if you're like me, your first instinct is wanting to know what's going on down there, wanting to know exactly what's going on down there and have sources, you know, telling you. But it's very tight-lipped, and there's not leaks of information coming there. The only thing you see is misinformation and false reports by people trying to create stories out of it.
Right.
I'm going to ask you a question that we had asked to us just the other day via social media. Do you think we'll see disclosure soon?
Basically, I think it's a matter of, like I said earlier, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. In the film, in their own words, Paul McGuire. And you guys know Paul. He's on the conference circuit, same circuit that we're all on.
Mm-hmm.
So we know Paul. We see him a lot. Great guy, real smart guy. And it's just a wonderful interview I did with him. And at the Koinonia House conference in October, that's when I started making the film. And, it was just amazing. Paul comes on the record and he basically talks about, the idea that there's going to be disclosure soon. I mean, he just comes right out and says it. And he actually says this year or next year. he's pointing at 2017 as the year in which they, the powers that be, will disclose. So, I mean, it can happen a whole, this is what's so interesting. It's like, this is a very complex subject. Here's some scenarios. And I talked about we go up, they, you know, they show up type thing. That scenario is still applicable. But again, it's even more complex because if, let's say Trump or with a bunch of people from the United Nations stand up and say, and they have pictures and they stand up and go, it's time to disclose what we have known for decades. These entities are friendly. They are here to help us, and they, here are their ships, and at some point in the near future, they're going to show up. That's, if the church is still here, enormous game changer. Enormous game changer. So, you know, the rapture hasn't happened at this point, and now we have soft disclosure, where the governments of the world are telling us that the UFO phenomenon is real. They're not backing off. They're not doing the weather balloon story that they've done for decades with Roswell. They're coming out and telling us. And who knows, maybe they would show us. If that happens, that's a major game changer. But see, we don't know. And, you know, people of UFO literature, specifically from the New Agers, have talked about this for decades. The idea that they would come, but before they would show up, they would take the people who aren't ready for this new paradigm shift off the planet. So they're already, I'm not making this up. That's what the other side of the aisle, that's what the New Agers have said for decades. Before I was a Christian, I remember hearing this from a friend of mine. I mean, verbatim what I'm telling you, and that's like, you know, 40 years ago, literally. The same thing. That, well, before they really show up, they're going to take the undesirables off. You know, those people who are fundamentalists and they just wouldn't be able to deal with this new paradigm shift. I mean, that's what I was told 40 years ago. And that has not gone away. That has not gone away. So, I mean, we're being set up for something. Paul comes on the record, and other people, Pastor Billy Crone, yep. You guys know him too. He's a regular, you know, again, on the circuit. Billy comes on the record and talks about disclosure. Same thing. I mean, we've got a myriad of people that come on the record talking about disclosure. Gary Stearman does the same thing. Gary comes on and talks about it. So it's there's a myriad of people. There's a group of people that come on the record in their own words and trying to warn the church, people from pastors to smart guys like Paul McGuire to, I think, one of the smartest men on the planet today, Gary Stearman, who comes on the record. All are saying that church needs to begin to talk about this. We need an open dialogue. That's the purpose of the film. You know, guys, what do you do when 30% of the people in the audience raise their hand? You know, and I did it again at Hear the Watchman. You know, when I, at Dallas just a couple of weeks ago, I said, look, this is, you know, I've already done the film because I was talking about the film. And I said, you know, because that was my presentation, Prince of the Power of the Air. And I said, you know, how many of you have seen a craft, UFO, blah, blah, blah? Easily 30% of the people in that audience. I just went, oh, my gosh. Well, I said, look around. Keep your hands up and look around. So we need to talk about it. Why? Because the church has the answers. We have the answers. God sends them strong delusion because they did not believe the truth. What is the truth? Which is completely in contradiction to the Darwinian paradigm. We are told that in the beginning was the Word, Jesus, and the Word was with God. He was with God from the beginning. All things were made by and through him, and nothing that was made was not made without him. Period. End of story. So we can believe that mythos of the Christian religion, which of course to me and you, it is not, you and me, it is not mythos. It is truth. It is real truth, not fake news. It is real truth. Or we can believe the fuzzy Darwinian paradigm nonsense that we were just seated here by a race of extraterrestrials. God sends them strong delusion because they did not believe the truth. We are in that window where people have walked away from the truth and are embracing the lie of Darwinism.
You know, LA, I agree 100%. And I'd like to just take this one step further. And this is something that I've been researching myself and talking with others about, that there will be scientific evidence that, how can I put this? That's without having to talk for 5 minutes. I guess there will be scientific evidence, DNA evidence, that, will prove the lineage of Jesus Christ, which is going to be false, but it's going to be based on supposed scientifically verified DNA evidence. And that lineage is going to point to or identify supposedly, the Antichrist or the leader of the one world order. Now, there might be variations to that. I'm not saying that this is definitive, but in turn, the people for example, the Vatican and others are going to say, well, your savior in quotation marks, the false savior, of course, or the false, not Jesus, but implying that it would be Jesus. The lineage of Jesus has been with you this entire time. Now, again, I'm just taking a very complex set of circumstances and just kind of smushing it all together. But I guess the reason I'm saying this is because what we're going to be seeing and given is the DNA is going to prove through the blood DNA that our leader is actually a god. I saw a small g. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. This is part of the coming great deception. This is what they're going, how they're going to couch it. Which, look, this is what amazes me. It's right there in black and white in our Bibles. And yet we don't really believe what we read. Well, the book of Revelation, that really doesn't concern me. You know, I got a mortgage to pay and kids to raise up money to get them through college, blah, blah, blah. And so we don't really believe. And when was the last time you sat in a church that actually talked about the book of Revelation? Hardly ever. It just never, ever happens. Certain denominations, you can sit there to the day you die, they'll never crack that book. And yet that book holds the key, holds the secret. And here's the deal. We know from the book of Revelation and elsewhere, like the book of Daniel, that in the time of the end, there's going to be a one world government, one world religious system. But that begs the question, how do we amalgamate these religions? How do we amalgamate 1.8 billion Christians, 1.5 billion Muslims, a billion Hindus or whatever it is and everybody else out? How's that going to work? And there is a way to make that work. When they show up and you say, well, hey, this is just an impossible scenario. I have talked to abductees in my, 30 years of researching this since before 1990 and doing it and talking and researching people and talking to abductees. Abductees have told me that they have been aboard craft and they have seen what appears to be holographic film of the Greys resurrecting Jesus. It's already there. Real. They've seen that. They've seen that, according to certain abductees, that they were shown a film where Jesus is in the tomb and a spaceship lands, the Greys come out and they resurrect him.
Wow.
There's also a shot of him on the cross. But all this is it's all confabulation. There's no way for me to vet that or prove that. But can you imagine if they had that and they show up and they start showing that and they show that Muhammad received the Quran, not from Angel Gabriel, from a UFO, right? Yeah. All that stuff is from a UFO and Krishna was actually from a UFO. What's interesting is there's a guy on the planet today called Claude Vorlihorn. And he calls himself Rael, the Raelians. And there are thousands and thousands of people who are into this cult. Claude Vorlihorn, before he changed his name to Rael, was taken aboard a craft in the 60s. And he was told that the Elohim were his father. And that his father, the God that he met, was the same father of Jesus Christ and they were brothers. I'm not making this stuff up. You can go online and, you can just Google Raelians and Rael and up it will come. So isn't it interesting that this mythos is everywhere in ufology where they come millions of miles to tell us that Jesus really wasn't Messiah, that he really wasn't the Savior. We'll show you who it is. That's the level of deception. And of course you back that up with craft and holographic film. And if you're not born again and spirit filled, what does it say? Why would Jesus warn us? Even the elect would be deceived if that were possible. So, folks go, oh, Marzullo, he's a fear mongerer. Take that what you will, folks. Just happen. That's why we call it the Watchman singular, Watchman Chronicles. That's what it is. All I'm doing is going out, spending time, energy, resources, endless hours of interviews and endless hours in the edit bag. And I'm doing all the editing now, by the way. Because I have to for the content. And all I'm doing is waving my arms and saying something's about to happen. You need to wake up. We need to wake up. If you heed the warning, great. The blood's not on me because I've told you what's coming. You know, if I don't say what's coming, then I'm not doing my job. And this was a position when I first came to the Lord 37 years ago. I never would have asked for this. You don't volunteer for this. You're raised up to it. And sometimes when you're in the process of being raised up, you don't even realize what the end game is. It's like, wait a minute. How did I get here type of thing? But that's what he does. And here I am. And so are you.
And yeah, exactly. We could not certainly have done this, on our own. And I know many people question if we can still do it as we're doing it. But that said, two things I wanted to mention. The Sabud cult, you had mentioned a couple of different, non-monotheistic religions polytheistic religions. However, the Sabud cult, I would like to add in there as well, because that has relevance to Obama and his origins. I know it's, folks, I know it's a stretch, but, there's folks, there are ties to Sabud and the very doctrine that is being spoken about by L.A. Marzulli, our guest. Now, the other thing too, I just find it interesting with all of the current events, the three world wars that we were told were going to happen, the confluence of events. Man, I'll tell you what, I think we are ready right now to see it any time. And when I say ready now, it could be a couple of years from now, but this era, I think this is the time. And that, which brings me to the question too, the Vatican changing popes midstream a couple of years ago. Never, hadn't seen that in modern times.
Yeah.
So with everything that you're seeing, we're seeing, there's something about ready to take place that's just going to change everything, as you say. Yeah.
And if it is UFO disclosure and it's just, they don't show the craft, but they show pictures and the leaders of the world come up and say it, that would be soft disclosure or more like hard disclosure, but still it's not like they haven't shown up yet. So it's a step. And I think that would certainly shake up everything. That shakes up everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that Fox News is throwing these stories about once every 4 to 6 months now, that to me is very telling. You know, why are they going out of their way to tell us this? Why do they insist on telling us that UFO sightings have reached an all-time high? No one cares, Doug and Joe. Nope, nobody cares. And even within the church, nobody cares. I won't say that. Very few people really care. And that's why we are, in my opinion, the Laodicean church. Fat and happy and basically asleep. But not all the people are asleep. People that listen to your show are wide awake, obviously. And they're getting this stuff and they're dealing with it and understanding that something's about to happen on this planet. The people that go to my YouTube channel, 55,000 strong and growing, same thing. They go there because they know something is up. I want to read you. This just came in. LA, we just brought over the new Watchmen Chronicles and we just finished it. We loved it. You definitely got to show your creative side right down in your CD music at the end. You're always saying bully for the Donald. Well, I'm saying bully for you. And then this is another person, Tari. Thank you so much for what you accomplished with this latest DVD. I've got all your watches, DVDs, and I'm excited for this new series. The church needs to wake up. So thank you for your voice in this critical hour. Great contact, great graphics, great message, and loved how personal it was, especially toward the end. I mean, we're getting this feedback from people who are watching the show, The Watchmen Chronicles, in their own words, UFOs are real. I'm not making this stuff up. So, you know, the critics, the people are watching it, they're loving it, and they're giving it to people and showing it around, and that's what it's about.
LA, I see in the show notes here that you have some new information on Roswell.
This is, I don't really have time to get into that. Are we doing a break at the bottom of the hour or no?
No, we're good until 57 minutes when we're done with the show.
So here's the deal with Roswell. And it's all the Lord, how things come across my desk. It's unbelievable. So this woman calls, Pastor Paul Bagley a while ago, and she had this little collection of stone carved heads. One of them was elongated. So Pastor Paul goes, oh, you want to call Elie Marzulli? You know, he might be interested in this. So she calls me, and I am interested in this. One thing leads to another. And, you know, I tell her that, thank you. I will purchase it. And we did purchase it. And this woman, her name is Carolyn, and her husband's name is Jim. Jim's a pastor. So Jim and Carolyn come on the record in their own words. But the reason the connection was this, in contacting her, she informed me that what she does for a living is she goes into end of life situations with people, and she begins to sell off their estate and use that cash for end of life support, doctors, medical bills, what have you, begins to liquidate it. So the onus isn't on the family. And so, in the course of our conversation with the elongated skull figurines, she was telling me about this one client that she had by the name of Colonel Hill, Colonel Jesse Hill. And this man died in 1990 or 1992, I think, at the age of 90 years old. This was essentially was a deathbed confession. And she told me the story over the phone, and I said, you know, Carolyn, I will be in Dallas to interview John B. Wells, who comes in on the film, by the way. Great interview with John B. And we'll shoot over from to where you live, because it's only a puddle jump flight, which was what we did. So I interviewed Jim and Carolyn. They come on the record in their own words, the Watchman Chronicles. And what's amazing about this, and you guys, I've already stated this, so when witnesses come on the record, they look right at the camera, and Jim goes, the testimony you're about to hear is true. Looks right at the camera, guy's a pastor, and she begins to tell the story. And once again, Wesley San Giorgi brings some of this to life. He just does a wonderful job. And in the beginning, our voiceover guy, Bill Myers, has done a lot of voiceover work. He was the voice of Jesus, actually, for Zondervan. So he's done a lot of voiceover work. He's also a published author. He's written like over 100 books, many of them children's books, but he also writes adult novels. And he's also been in like 10 films himself. So he and I have been friends for like years. And so he's got a great voice. Bill does the narration for the whole film. So while Bill is talking, narrating the whole Roswell, I'm showing all these like pictures of all the different books and some of the Roswell lore and the literature and pictures of Dr. Jesse Marcel, Jr. and Jesse Marcel Sr., who was there at the crash site, the weather balloons, just the paper clipping show, you know, UFO Army gets the crash dish. All this is like, so there's a whole montage, which happens very quick. And then we come up to Jim and Carolyn in the film. And Carolyn starts the story, and she was with Colonel Hill for about 2 years. She saw him daily, and they got to be very close. And so she says one day she asked him, well, what about Roswell? Now, Colonel Hill was OSS. He was an interrogator in World War II. He had 4 degrees. I forget what they are, but I know one of them was philosophy, religion, psychiatry, and I forget the other one. So he had 4 degrees, highly educated, very intelligent man, OSS, forerunner of the CIA, was an interrogator in World War II, pretty much a lifer military guy. And so she gets to know him, and she's curious about Roswell, just like we all are. And knowing this guy's background, at one point she says, what about Roswell? And this is a month before he died. So he's already very weak, sitting in a chair. She asks him his question. His head drops like this, and he thinks about it for a second. He lifts his head up, and he says, what about it? And she asks him, was it a weather balloon or something else? And that's when the story takes off. And he tells her it wasn't a weather balloon. What crashed in the desert was not a weather balloon. Colonel Hill was stationed at Dallas-Fort Worth when the crash happened. And he was flown from Dallas-Fort Worth to Roswell, New Mexico, within 24 hours, 48 hours of the crash or when the Army retrieved it. At this point, he said that there were two bodies that he had contact with. One of them was already deceased. The other was still alive, and they were trying to work on it to keep it alive. Colonel Hill, because he was an interrogator, attempted to communicate with this entity, but allegedly, according to Carolyn, was unsuccessful, was not able to communicate with this thing. He also stated, and this goes right along with the record that we've heard for years, that the wreckage and everything else was shipped off to Wright-Patterson in Ohio. Surprise, surprise, surprise. So Hill died a month after that. And Carolyn comes, I mean, it's an amazing testimony. And she comes on the record because I challenge her and I go, well, you know, how you know this guy was, you know, and she looks right at the camera. She goes, Colonel Hill was military like that. You know, it's like he was military. And then Jim goes, we knew him and he wasn't the type of guy who would create a prank or a canard. So both of them are like, they're putting their integrity on the line to back him up. And they state that the man was honest, intelligent, and it was a deathbed confession. So she asked him, he said, well, what was one of the attributes of these entities which differentiated it from a human being? Now, they were small of stature, like under 5 feet, 4 foot something. So they're about this high on me, small, right? Because I'm 6 feet. So they're about like this. Long arms, thin bodies, very large head, dark eyes. Essentially the grays. That's what's there. And that's a 3-hour conversation as to why the crash happened. Go to David Flynn's site. Just Google David Flynn and what the paper that you want to get for that would be the Mount Hermon Roswell connection. And he's no longer with us. David passed away a number of years ago. It's just an incredible, paper that he wrote about the Roswell Mount Hermon connection, because there is a connection. And I remember, after reading the paper, it finally brought me across the line and I realized the crash was deliberate. The crash was deliberate. And David Flynn posited that here is Mount Hermon over in the Middle East. When you travel to the opposite side of the globe on that same parallel, you wind up in Roswell, New Mexico. The opposite side of the globe, you wind up in Roswell, New Mexico. That's not a coinkadink. It's not a coinkadink. It's deliberate. So the crash was deliberate, and David Flynn also believed, like I do now, that it was deliberate. Because the grays are automatons. They are basically avatars. The demons inhabit these avatars, and that's how they move around in this dimension. Without that, they can't manifest. A demon is not a fallen angel. A demon is the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim. And in order for them to manifest in our dimension, they need something to inhabit, and that's what they do. Satan has created these avatars, in my opinion, which is why they all look alike, and they're all like jerky motions, and they're devoid of emotion as we know it. Okay, so she asked this question. What differentiates these aliens or entities from human beings? And he hung his head again and lifted it up and held his hand up and said, they had 6 fingers, not 5. They had 6 fingers, not 5. And then she also states that they were wearing some sort of a suit, which we've heard. Everything in her testimony jibes with everything that we've heard for decades regarding Roswell. It does. Everything jibes in her story. So once again, it's a deathbed confession. And this is what I mean, Doug and Joe. There's so much information out there. The fact that I can come on your show and discuss it is incredible. And the reason why we can is because they know that most people really don't care. In the 90s, I wouldn't, more than likely, I would be taken out. You couldn't talk about the stuff in the 90s. But they realize, so what? Somar's always a whistleblower. He's talking to people on underground bases, people with deathbed confessions. How many people are listening to him? 55,000 on YouTube, right? Out of how many million of people in America? Small change. And I am. Nobody cares. Now, if those numbers escalate to 3 or 4 million, I'm sure I'll get a knock on the door. I'm sure I will. Just like, you know, Pastor Paul was, you're on the list, I'm on the list, Stearman's on the list, Dizdar's on the list, Hannity's on the list, Savage is on the list. I get that. I was approached in Dallas and I had two veiled threats, which I told you about at the top of the show. So, okay, I get it. Colonel Hill did not exaggerate. It was a deathbed confession. Jim and Carolyn are forthright. They're pastors. They have a ministry. And I went with it because I believe their story. And it corroborates almost everything we've heard coming out of Roswell. So could disclosure be this year? Heck yeah. And that's alarming. That's alarming.
It is. In the show notes, this is the first time I've seen this phrase. You talk about UFO brain fog. Can you get into this a little bit? I mean, I see what it means, but I'd like to hear what your experience with this is. And I'm not going to spoil any of this. So go ahead.
UFO brain fog. Look, when you edit film, it's hours and hours and hours. People don't understand that. You've got all this stuff, all this film, all these interviews. Now I have to tell a story. And, you know, thanks to Richard Shaw because he gave me a lot of tutorials for the last year. So I did like 26 half hour shows for television. So I learned Final Cut Pro. Am I an expert? No, but I learned, and this was my first standalone film. So I did the editing. And as you watch clips over and over and over again, as I began to put clips together and tell the story and select the music and just move the story along, because I've written three novels, I've written 11 books, so it's all the same thing. We're trying to tell a story. So my medium now is film. It's not just, you know, the one dimensionality of a novel, let's say. It's film. So in the course of doing this, I'm watching these guys and listening to a story over and over and over again, and it dawns on me something which I've labeled UFO brain fog. The one story is this guy comes on the record. His name is also Al Witherspoon. He's driving across Kansas. His brother's asleep in the back. His sister-in-law is in the passenger seat. They're driving across Kansas. In the distance, it's at night, like midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. There's this orange orb. It's like the sun, but it's not emanating light. And it's there, and they're watching it and watching it and watching it. All of a sudden, this thing comes in like this. Wow! And it's like right next to the car, okay? Right next to the car. The brother in the bat seat wakes up. They all look at it. They look at it. No one says a word. They look at it. Then he says, after the orb left, we just concentrated on our driving. Is that normal reaction? Of course not. No one would do it. If the three of us were in that car and an orb came across, first thing we'd be doing is going, oh my gosh, what is it? We'd be free. All three of these people are looking at the orb. No one is saying anything. And then when the orb leaves, they just concentrate on driving. Are you kidding me? This is why I rebuke first, ask questions later. The second one is a woman who, it's years ago. There's a dance. They've got one big car, big station wagon. They've got 12 girls in the car, okay? It's packed with girls. They're taking these girls home. They've dropped off six. Six remain, all right? And it's a really fascinating story. They see something over the tree line, and they pull over, and they all get out of the car to look. And it's a disc. It's a UFO. And they freak out, and they get back in the car. And she says to her sister who's driving, let's get out of here. Let's get out of here. Then she says this, we were speeding, but we weren't going anywhere. We were speeding, but we weren't going there. Doug and Joe, this is decades after the experience. Decades. And she's still stuck trying to piece together what happened. We were speeding, but we weren't going anywhere. When they arrive at the house to drop off the girls, the mother comes out and she's irate. Irate. Why? 3 hours of missing time.
Mm.
3 hours of missing time.
Wow.
The brain fog is we're speeding, but we didn't go anywhere. The brain fog is we looked at the orb. When the orb came next to the car, we looked at it, but we didn't say anything. And after it left, we just concentrated on our driving. Completely irrational, totally irrational, which is why which is why, one, we don't entertain it. Two, if we see anything, immediately rebuke them in the name of Jesus. Rebuke first, ask questions later. That's what we've got to do.